Where does our dark night of the soul come from? I can tell you very clearly, it is not something natural. It is not something natural in a sense that it is automatic and it is for every human being. It is not. Because I can tell you that, for example, other sentient beings, animals, plants, whatsoever, don't have this dark night of the soul. So here it must dawn on the human being that that dark night of the soul, that depression and all these things, only come from the human story, from that false story of who am I.
Welcome to the Voices of the One Mind, where the elixir of wisdom flows freely. Join us as we dive into the profound thoughts of extraordinary human beings who embody wisdom, offering insights that serve as a bridge to awakening. Unshackling minds from the chains of suffering, our conversations pave the way for enhanced health, enriched lives, and exponential spiritual growth. Get ready to sip on the nectar of the One Mind with us.
When you begin to love the beast within, you no longer fear it. You reclaim your truth, stop projecting onto others, and help build a more conscious, compassionate world from the inside out. Some call it the shadow, others dark twin, soul work. In essence, is the unseen, unknown, the divine within that most of us spend their lives avoiding. In this episode, we explore the power of the process of meeting that part of yourself with disown, the unknown, and discover the gold they carry. Emotional triggers, judgment, and projections are not obstacles, but signposts. How the qualities we've labeled as bad or weak can hold our greatest strength, creativity, and purpose, and how the personal shadow, it felt unreflected, feeds the collective shadow, showing up in war, oppression, denial, and disconnection. It's not a breakdown, it's a breakthrough, masked as madness, and here I am with Bersa Orin to answer and guide the process. Welcome, Bear.
Appreciate very much being here with you. Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very happy to be in another explorational journey with you.
Appreciate as well. Hearing my introduction about today's topic and what we would like to explore, I would like to ask you where one starts and why is confronting it so terrifying and so necessary?
Well, first of all, we have to ask a question, where did humanity take off the wrong path to demonify this kind of what you call shadow work, you know? We give it a name as the dark voyage of the soul, shadow work. All that draws us into that belief system that it is something bad. And this is something we have to break up from the very beginning, that it is part of that roundness of life, of that circle of life, of the experience of the earth walk. And it is not separated. It is not that we live our happy life and then in some areas and in some times, in some periods, we are going through a dark shadow. And that is a problem, that is an issue, and then we don't want to look at it and we push it away and all these kind of things. So it obviously has to do with a dualistic view of the expression of life. And whenever we look at life from a dualistic perspective, we always get these opposites. Happy life versus sad life, life full of sorrow. And this is not the reality. This is an illusion. There is no happy life and a life full of sorrow. There is just life. It's the oneness of expression. Where do we start? We literally always, you know my answer by now, we always start with the question, who am I? Because with this question, everything starts. And when I'm able to answer, who am I? And in this answer, it slowly starts to dawn on me that these so-called shadow parts of the being, of the expression of that human aggregate, is one of the fuels of life, one of the things that nourishes life, then I'm already at a very good starting point, and then I'm already mentally ready to accept these so-called shadow sides of oneself.
Yeah, listening to you, of course, I will totally agree. Let's not call it shadow work. Let's call it soul work, because it's throughout the life. And you mentioned something about the belief system, right? And my next question will be, what happens when everything you believe about yourself collapses?
Well, the first question here needs to be, are you ready to have everything collapse? Because the whole life expression, the whole spiritual path, is not to become something, to achieve something. It's only the one thing, coming back to where you have started. Coming back, because everything is always there and has always been there. Only throughout your life you have taken on, we have all taken on all these attributes and masks. One topic is identity, a name, a job, a profession, which throughout life we identify ourselves. And are we ready? That's the big question. Is a human being ready to let drop all of this and literally become aware of that raw being, of that raw human being, with all its life story, with all its attributes? Once we are at that point, we will also get a very different perspective of the so-called shadow work. So many people, I read that a lot in the New Age, propaganda. What I read there is that there is something like a spiritual bypassing, right? And what is claimed there is that the spiritual bypassing is leading a human being to not face, for example, the dark sides, the emotions, the anger, and all these kind of things. And I have to break with that, because the moment I know who I am, I'm able to understand that this is a necessary part of me in order to bring me back to where I have left, kind of on the way home, as we call it. And it is not necessary to dive completely deep in each of these topics in order to overcome them. Because why? Because the moment I'm ready to drop, or let me explain it in that way, if I'm approaching it from the psychological level, if I go to a psychiatrist, for example, and I approach it from that level, it's a very dual level. I am not ready at this point to let go of the ego self. Because who is creating this so-called shadow side? It is the ego self. It's the story of the ego that creates that reality. And if I'm ready to let go of that story for good, of the main story of the being, what happens automatically? That also that story of my sorrow, of my anger, of my... it will drop automatically. But as long as I'm holding on to that personification, this identification, as long as I carry all the packages around it, and one of that is the package of emotional up and downs, of sorrow, of all these things. So it is important to come to the point to really raw look at the being as the being started its earth walk without all that stories. And that automatically leads to the full awareness and to not anymore condemnify one part as shadow work or the dark night of the soul, etc., etc., because it is understood that this is part of the story.
I think you touch a couple of very important topics. One is persona. And when we talk about soul work or these concepts, I think everything starts from the persona. And as you say all the time, who are you without the story? So with the story that you create around persona. And of course, a second part, you already mentioned, it's around ego desires, that it's more around the conditional conditions in the society. So I will just pick one example for this soul work and to understand better what do we mean. So we are referring here about the judgmental, that we can go to an event and we just like to be liked by other people, right? And that will feed also your ego. You want to please in order to be admired or anything like that, right? And that it's a story that you tell in the public in order to be liked. So it's not your truth. So in society nowadays, a lot of people just mask this aspects because they would like to be liked by others. So we cannot be ourselves. And this is probably also the story that you are talking about around the persona. So now, how can one identify if we are already entangled in societal conditioning, in the stories that, in the desires that, the judgments that we have with in relationship, being romantic or not? How can we identify, because you are talking about being ready to drop these beliefs, being ready to start this work, or being ready to bring these qualities of yours into awareness? How can one start to identify them? I know for a fact, mirroring with others, but when can you also be yourself? When can you integrate it?
When can you be yourself? So that's a very profound question. Because the question really is, what means to be yourself? Yourself can also be understood as, when can you live what your desires are? And then the question is, where does these desires come from? You know, we are all, as you say, humans are looking for appreciation and all these kind of things. When you identify, when you are ready to inquire and deeply look to it, as long as you have all these notions that you want to be, you need that kind of societal or from your partner or whatever appreciations. That is definitely a very clear sign that you are still dwelling in the comfort zone of your ego, and you're dwelling in that zone of you perceive the world as that is me, and there is something and the rest is the world outside of me, meaning very clearly you're dwelling still in that idea of separation. The mirroring with others that you mentioned is also, at the end, it always goes back to this one point: am I ready to look deeply inside? Am I ready to inquire, or as other one says, to reflect myself? That is the very important point. As long as I constantly go into a ping pong play when I, for example, have an argument or discussion with my partner, with my boss, with my children, as long as if I go into this ping pong play, I show very clearly that I'm not ready to ask that question, who am I? Because I'm still coming from that point. There is something in the outside, and this outside is not behaving and doing what I want. And so by this behavior, this illusionary idea that this outside is doing something that I don't want, I create worries, I create sorrow, I create, and all of that leads to that what you called initially accumulating all these little bits and pieces lead that at one stage that human aggregate is running through that so-called dark night of the soul, which can express itself in heavy depression and in physical diseases and so on. It always starts, everything starts as starts small and becomes an accumulation of things. So when we ask, when we want to ask, where does our dark night of the soul come from? I can tell you very clearly, it is not something natural. It is not something natural in a sense that it is automatic and it is for every human being. It is not. Because I can tell you that, for example, other sentient beings, animals, plants, whatsoever, don't have this dark night of the soul. So here it must dawn on the human being that dark night of the soul, that depression and all these things, only come from the human story, from that false story of who am I. I build up a story, and around that story, I build up a lot of sorrow. Of course, I don't want that sorrow, but that happens automatically. And so we, for example, we have a job and we want to make a career, and then we are fighting ourselves through all these corporations to climb up the ladder. And that's a hard fight, and that creates sorrow, that creates emotional disbalance. So that goes on the minus account of the dark night of the soul and fills up that cloud there. And then we continue, we are accumulating a lot of goods by consuming, three cars, two houses, this and that. All of that is not only the beauty of having it, but it's also automatically, whenever you own something, there comes also, let me call it, a downside with it, right? And that all accumulates to that, that at one stage in life may break out as a big depression, for example, and that might go further, and that creates diseases also on the human body, for example, when you get tumors or have cancers, it's not cancer really. What it is a conflict. It is an internal conflict. It's the accumulation of an internal conflict. And that is what I just drew out, is the way how it goes to that conflict. Humans forget. I mean, you can see it when there is an election. People go to the elections and politicians say something, and then they do exactly the opposite. And 3 years later, they vote the same politicians because they already forgot within after 1 year what the politician has promised them. So humans have a very short span of remembering, and the same is for that. When it comes to the dark side of the soul, humans are not aware that it has been a lot of bits and pieces of that karma, action and reaction, that I build up in my own life. So karma is not a book where is written in all the bad things that you have done, as many people believe, especially in the Western world. Karma just means actually action. And obviously for each action there is a reaction, because we always have, the whole universe, the whole cosmos, and every sentient being is working always on the impulse of contracting and expanding, contracting and expanding. That's a natural impulse of growth of life.
So reaction in your example is just how you answer to a specific action.
Not even how you answer, but how the cosmos answers, how the nature that unfolds around you answers. You might do an action, and then there is some sort of a reaction. But that reaction, and here my point with the human being, that either doesn't have enough broad vision or remembrance to call that in the remembering, is what were these actions that I did, you know? And they have, the reactions are sometimes very subtle, that you know, to make these connections. But we can say one thing that covers it all is whatever hardship I go through in my life. On one hand, as I explained in the beginning, it is part of me and it is necessary in order to help that growth out of the persona back to where I started. And on the other hand, it is an accumulation of a lot of small little actions that I have done. I was mentioning the disease that I call conflict, right? So this conflict that has manifested within the human body comes not from any karmic imprints that your blueprint, your solic blueprint, you brought into this life. Absolutely not. That's an accumulation that you have done through your earth walk. And that leads to that outcome.
Very beautiful. So how working with the self, because this is what I call also an intro to the divine that you can find within, if you are able to acknowledge whatever triggers you. In connection with others or with the environment around you, being a situation at work, being a conversation with parents or whatever. So how can this soul work transforms you.
So first of all, one can find the divine within. Let me tell you that the divine is everything and everywhere. The question is only, always, am I able to be aware of it? Is my consciousness in a state to be able to be aware of it? And whenever I am not able to be aware of it, it means that I create a conflict. Because the divine, the one mind, is everything. So everything turns around that always, any question turns always around that one central point. How do I perceive myself? Do I perceive myself as the human body that is separated from the rest of the world? And in some way, of course, interacting with the world and in some way connected with it? Or do I perceive the presence that this consciousness is perceiving as the entireness of all creation? That's a fundamental question. And as long as I am in that misunderstanding that this body is separated because it's a body with its own mental cognitive workflow from all the rest, constantly that human being will be in some thought of fight and some thought of conflict. There is no way out. There is no way out. Everything at the end of the day is a perceptual question. And the whole spiritual path is not, as I said before, to learn something, to become super enlightened, the whole spiritual path is to reach that point of perception. When a human body was manifested as a little baby, in the first few years, up to the first 3 years, the human consciousness is a pure navel consciousness. It's a navel consciousness. Everything that a baby perceives from the outside world is perceived into the center of the navel, and hence, which is the intuitive center that connects with all the knowledge of the cosmos. Later on in life, year 4, 5, 6, and so on, the consciousness starts to come from a navel consciousness to a mental consciousness. And a mental consciousness is an ego consciousness, a pure ego consciousness. A navel consciousness is the consciousness of the cosmos because it's directly connected with all the knowledge in the cosmos. The mental consciousness is a consciousness that separates itself all of a sudden from all that there is and starts to create that persona. And then all the journey of all the conflict and sorrow starts. And I can do as many visits to a psychiatrist, I can do as many ayahuasca ceremonies and drug ceremonies and whatsoever and see all kind of very beautiful images. If I am not able to see the world from the perspective of the pure I am, I am not able to ever change that perception back to navel consciousness. Everything will always stay in the mental perceptive field. And that is the very important thing to understand. The whole spiritual path that a human being is going through is only one thing on the earth walk, is to shift again the mental consciousness again down to a navel consciousness where I started as the human being. That's the spiritual path. That's the spiritual path. And I said it also in another episode that the voyage from 3D to 5D is only 20 centimeters from here to here. And actually, it is from here to here. Because that is the center of the heart. This is the muscle that humans call the heart. But that is the center that is connected with the cosmic love, the KDIUCL, Cosmic Divine Infinite Unconditional Compassionate Love, that comes from that center here.
Now that we go deeper into this topic, I would like to give to work with you on a personal or collective example. So let's say in my 80% of the population for sure still working, you know, corporation, small company, it really doesn't matter. Some of them are doing something that they like, some of them are doing something that they need to do it in order to go on this survival experience here on Earth. And now, let's say maybe a colleague triggers you, but it's not that he intentionally triggers you, but something within, it's not anymore harmonized, right? Like you feel something that is maybe anger, maybe an emotion that you cannot really describe, right? And there are situations where we are not reflected, of course, and we tend to answer or react with anger or with a loud voice, which again doesn't bring us closer to a harmony within nor without, because what's within is also without. What will be in your perception, or what suggestions can you give us in taking a step back and harmonizing the whole situation, or at least identify what is that emotion that doesn't let us harmonize the situation?
Well, we know all these situations that we answer in rage to something that... So, you know, everything... If you ask me, what can you tell us? I cannot give you a formula. I cannot give you a piece of chocolate and say, take this, because I can give you a piece of chocolate. I can give you a piece of chocolate and I can tell you, if you eat this piece of chocolate before you answer that person, the situation is solved and you are reflected. The point is, I can give you that chocolate, but will you eat the chocolate in that very moment? The chocolate is a metaphor for some formula that you could do. Of course, I can say, whenever you are in a conflict situation, or don't answer immediately, breathe. Because we always know when we breathe very deeply, we change the entire energy of that whole field. The question is more, I can give you 20 examples what you can do. Are you remembering them in this very moment? Are you applying them in this very moment? This is the point. So I can analyze. The thing starts much earlier than giving people a recipe to say, when you are in a conflict, do this. The question is, where is the triggering coming from? What is the triggering? You see? Again, The mother of all this triggering is the idea of separation. You mentioned it. A colleague triggers me. Already, the formulation of that sentence shows that the colleague is perceived as not me in a different expression. It's perceived as a separate entity that wants something that doesn't feel comfortable with me.
Then I will rephrase. I would call it the master who helps me to unveil something about myself, something about the story I'm telling to myself and suppressed emotions that I have within myself.
Imagine that just little story about like the yogic culture. In the yogic culture, they have Brahman as the great mystery, as the great spirit, right? As that one mind. And then there is Atman, which is Brahman. And Atman is the personified or the manifested cosmic intelligence. Okay? And so they say that Brahman and Atman are doing nothing else than playing hide and seek with each other. Take that metaphor. You're going to the office, okay? And you have that conflict with your colleague that you mentioned. So me that is getting triggered with it, I am Atman. And this is Brahman. And Brahman is showing to itself where on the earth walk there are still unresolved things. Now, is Atman ready to look at it is one big question. And most of the time, is not. And that's why we have all this quarrel and all these things. And everything starts, the whole unfolding of the entire world, everything that starts here, it's starting from the lens of Atman. I know that most of the people listening to that cannot wrap their head around when I say that all the wars in the world start in my head. All of them. All of them, because they start from that very notion of separation. And so many Eastern philosophers and sages have always told the human being, please don't change the world. The only thing that you need to change is yourself. And by that you have changed the whole world. Native Americans say that the flapping of a wing of a butterfly can change the entire climate of the world. And that's much more than just a metaphor or a little storytelling.
You anticipated my next question, which was exactly on the collective shadow work, right? How your personal soul work can influence the collective one? And probably it's already what you already started to elaborate on, right?
The question is, collective. What is collective? See, collective is from a lens of separation. Because if this person that phrases the word collective would be part of that, then this is me. It's not collective. Because collective is something, one and two and three or four apples are single apples, but if I put them in the basket, they are collective apples. But it's still four apples in that collection, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, I'm not the apples, I'm the basket. That is the big understanding here. That is the big understanding. I am not the apples, I am the basket. And so whenever in the New Age, for example, we have all these talking nowadays of there is a collective awakening. There is no such thing as a collective awakening. The awakening can only be from the lens of the perceiver, always. Always. Because collective is an illusion. The collective is an illusion. It's Atman that realizes Brahman. That Atman that realizes many, many, many other Atmans that in reality are at all of that is Brahman, to stay with that yogic story or explanation. And so as I said already before, when people say, I want to change the world, I want to do good for the world, you know, this is literally the biggest illusion. This is the biggest illusion. It starts in very small examples. If people go and demonstrate against, you know, whatever pollution of the world and do all these things, as if you integrate it and if you live it for yourself, all is good, all is done. Nothing more needs to be done. Everything will change. And this is also something that people cannot wrap their head around. If people realize that there is no such thing as separation, they all of a sudden realize that when they change something, that automatically everything is changed.
You mean change something within yourself, identifying?
Identifying your even the behavior of the human aggregate in daily life, you know, how you speak to people. Do you speak open-heartedly? Do you have empathy, or are you in all your story? All of a sudden, when you come from that notion that you have realized what I am, to be I am, really means, all of a sudden you will realize that all this that around you were still triggers you didn't like, you hated that person and so on, all of a sudden all that vanishes. All of a sudden all that vanishes. Because you will realize that the person that you hate doesn't exist. It's all a story in your head. The hatred is all a story in your head. The hatred is not in the manifested silhouette of that human body that is standing outside of your ego lens perception.
So it's all about how deep and you are as an observer. We need to spend some time with ourselves to be able to go into this observation practice and not act or react. Observation, because you also mentioned reflect on how you behave to people, right? So in order to reflect, you need to be able to not listen to your chatter mind, but to observe. And that's always coming from a bit more calm space.
Absolutely. And you need to observe your reaction and not the reaction of someone else. Every reaction of someone else, when we go again into this dual world, is nothing else than an invitation of an inquiry and a reflection. That's all. That's all. You mentioned before the word master. The master is knocking on your door until you have resolved the issue. Meaning, when people say, for example, they have a relationship and they are fighting all the time. And then they say, now it's over and I'm leaving you. I'm going. It is 100% that the next person that you meet in life will trigger in you the very same things that you had with the other one. Just the other one had a different hair color, a different name, but substantially nothing has changed. Because again, the change doesn't come from the outside. The outside is only a projection, an invitation. It's only a master, to go again with the yogic philosophy, the master is knocking on your door. What does that mean? It knocks on your door until you have resolved that thing.
Now I have to say that also looking at myself, in my past experiences, it's very challenging to acknowledge that it's within you. I mean, and here, whenever you are ready, as you say, for that step, you start to judge yourself. That's to criticize yourself, to not love that part of yourself. And it's difficult because we should embrace it, we should integrate it, love it as one, as you said. So how do you go from that reflection to something that you are ready to integrate? Like, what needs to change within?
When we come down to a human mental level from the ego perspective or perception and perspective from both, isn't it the easiest when something is uncomfortable to run away? That is what the ego wants to do. The ego wants to stay in a comfort zone, right? And so we tend to just run away. Whatever the situation, let's say what I mentioned just before, we have conflict with our partner and that goes on. And then at one stage, there is no future anymore to this relationship. And then what does the ego do? Just runs away. Because then it's over, right? The moment I run away, then it's over. There are people going as far as they commit suicide, for example, because their life was so full of conflicts that the ego commits suicide. It's the ego that commits suicide, of course. Because the ego perceives the moment I commit suicide and that body doesn't exist no more, all the problems are over. And coming to more examples like this throughout life, we constantly run away from situations. And other people might say, no, it's not good to run away. We need to face them. We need to face our enemy. But the question is, everything out there is a big theatrical play that this being is putting into motion as the director, as the lens, as the camera, as the canvas, as the actors. And this has to be integrated and realized. Otherwise, there is no such thing as a life in bliss. The Earthwalk is a life in bliss. The Earthwalk is the walk in the heavens. However, if the ego completely falls for the illusion of separation and plays its own story, instead of letting life unfold in its bliss, then all these misunderstandings, the conflicts, and everything happens. At the end of the day, actually, it's pretty simple and pretty easy. I mean, it's pretty simple, less easy for the ego. It is always that lens. So everything that shows up around that one. So when you ask me, what can you tell people to do? If you are able to bring this in your awareness in that very moment, whatever conflict you are facing, to ask that, to give that one answer, it's only a theatrical play around. And it's only played for to see how the audience is reacting to it. That is the only reason why things are happening in general. And whenever you are able to remember that this is a theatrical play and you don't react to it, you are at that point. You are at this core center point. You are at the lens of I am.
To understand that this whole experience, it breaks you before it heals you, right? This transformation that is happening.
Okay. Who is you? It breaks you before it heals you. And here is the question again, who is you? You is the ego. And obviously it needs to break the ego. And the ego needs to die. When we are talking about in many different cultures around the world, we talk about the you need to die to live. What does that mean, you need to die to live? You, your story, your whole concept, that needs to die. Otherwise, you will never be able to sip on that blissful nectar of life. It's impossible. As long as you keep up your own story, telling yourself that you are this and this is your job, and it's not that you tell how, it's a very subliminal process, you know? This whole integration, you come from that family, you come from that country, you grew up there, you went to this school, all these kind of ideas, they are influencing your moment, how you live. And I don't want to go now in while we have the topic of the dark night of the soul or the shadow side of the soul. I don't want to go into the illusion of time and space. Just to say very quickly, time is an illusion. Time is a thing that is again followed by the ego and made from the ego. There is no such thing as time. There is only this moment. There is no past and there is no future. It's only this moment where things can happen. You cannot travel to a place physically of the past. You cannot travel to a place in the future. You can only be in the here and now. And as long as we constantly live in that idea of past, we are telling ourselves a big story that influences that very moment. So we have to get rid of that story in the first place. And when we get rid of that story, we get rid of all the suffering that we have around. And I have to mention it again. This wording of spiritual bypassing is a pure expression of the New Age religion. There is no such thing as spiritual bypassing. You cannot bypass spirit. That by itself, even in the wording, is hilarious. It is that you ask fundamental questions. How did I come from a consciousness from here to a consciousness there? And how is the way back? That's the only question that needs to be asked.
I would like to focus a bit or to put the lens closer to ego death. So what does it mean? It's like to not have desires, attachments. Are we referring to this part?
Yes. The ego death is one of the main things of the ego, is that the ego has desires. The ego has ambition. Once we refrain from desires and from ambition, this is a big part of letting the ego die. Because what does that mean? It's not anymore the mental cognition that tries to control life. It is now that when I don't have desires anymore and ambition, I'm giving myself to the flowing river of life. We all want to do, we all want to achieve, we all want to have career, we all want to build a house, we all want to have children, we all want to make family, we want this, we want that, we want to buy so many things, we want to retire, we want to sit on the beach. Want. Where is life able to penetrate through all of that? Not possible. Where is the cosmos? Where is the cosmic consciousness be able to fill up this vessel? when this vessel is completely full with all kind of egoistic cluttering achievements and all kind of goals and targets.
Is this because we are afraid of the unknown?
So we are afraid of the unknown. The ego is afraid of the unknown. The ego is absolutely afraid of the unknown. And obviously, if we look to the world, the ego is so filled up, if you look to media, to keep that ego in fear. And then the ego is by per se, the ego, per se, the ego is fear. The ego is fear. Fear does not exist. Okay? So it's a very clear understanding to make. Fear does not exist. The ego is fear.
Exist in the mental construct, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
That's why people nowadays are working more with the mind rather than with the heart.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And thinking less with the heart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always have to come back to this one sentence when some Native American elders came out from the White House 200-300 years ago and said that they were at the hearing, and then they were coming back to their tribe and said, these white people, I cannot understand them. They are thinking with their brain. They are not thinking with their heart. Very strange. For them, it was literally, they could not understand, they could not grasp how people can be so cognitively ruled in their way of expressing life on earth. It's a constant decision making, you see? That is something that the ego mind does, making constantly decisions, decision, 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 decision. Now, when we come back to an understanding that in the cosmos, there is this intelligence of the one mind that is everything, that flows through all the life. The human aggregate is able to live from that source when we come back to that navel intelligence. That's a physical expression now, the difference between the mental cognition, the brain, and the navel area. And only from here we are connecting to this cosmic intelligence. And when everything is so full, as I said before, Native Americans call it the hollow bone. Others call it the empty vessel. Every sentient being, in order to live a really blissful life, needs to become that empty vessel. And so it's very, there is no recipe to give to people how they can less suffer in their life. Nobody can hand you over that light. No guru, no teacher. The light is in you, and it's here. And as long as the ego doesn't die, and the human aggregate is living from that light here, no one else in the outside can really do anything.
Can give you pointers.
One can give people pointers, but it's the ego always. People can talk so many things. I can tell people so many things. If the ego is, if there is an opening to the naval center so that we can shift the consciousness again down here, it's one very, 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 very big aspect is the naval consciousness. It's the fundamental part of the human aggregate. It's the fundamental part of the human aggregate. It's the core, the center. And the further we are away, the further we are away from a blissful life, the more we have suffering in our life.
Which leads me to the curiosity. So this anger or an emotional trigger, how can one use it or redirect it towards a positive energy? For example, replay shame with curiosity, connection, from disconnection to connection. Once you can do small transition and change your perception, as you said from the beginning, how can you use it or direct your energy towards that positiveness perception?
Well, to use that energy, I want to say is not a beneficial thing, because if I use my anger or my sorrow, and we know that the human aggregate can create a lot of energy out of that, and mostly that energy is ambition and over ambition. So maybe people have had that thing that they had they had some difficulties in life and were in a sorrow, and out of that all of a sudden they became over ambitious in doing some sports, some workout, putting all the energy towards career and stuff like this. So that is definitely not that will lead us into a more blissful life, because that is just a running into another. As you take the same amount of energy and you put it into some other field, and we should not have these impulsive energies, no matter where we direct it. We should not have these impulses, because they are always an overflow of something. You know, life, if you look to a river, flows, right? And we should go in that same, ideally in that same flow, yeah, to align with nature. And so whenever we have an over impulse, it's obviously creating some distortion on some other field, right? So if I take anger and I put all this anger energy into career making, that means I don't have time to sit and reflect, because I'm just running on another field now. So you mentioned how we can redirect. It's not about redirecting anything here, because redirecting is the following: you're brooming in your room, you saw some dirt, and what are you doing with the dirt? You're lifting up the rug and you put the dirt under the rug. So is the dirt now gone?
No.
It's not gone. It's just out of your sight, but it's not gone. That is redirecting. What you just did is you redirected the dirt. Okay? Mm-hmm. And the thing to do is, it boils always down to the same point, is reflection and inquiry. It's not important to understand where it comes from. The understanding is that the ego is hurt, and that pain shows itself in an angry reaction to something, right? What happens when we have an angry reaction to some situation, to other people? These other people, in 90% of the cases, will react also angry back.
That's the seed that you put in.
It's a pure reflection. And then there might be another few percentage of people that they just don't react to your anger at all. And that, in many situations makes you even more angry. Because then is not mirrored one-to-one what you are expressing in this moment, but then is mirrored what would be the way to express. And your higher self knows that you are not capable in this very moment to express that. And then the ego goes ballistic, even more angry. So, the question is not again where it comes from, because it comes from some pain that is stored in that ego story from the childhood, from the past, from the mother that didn't, you know, that the mother didn't love enough. And I can really see this one-to-one and share my personal story. I had for a very long period in my life, until I was beginning 30s, always the idea and the notion my mother didn't love me enough. My mother didn't love me enough. She didn't do enough for me, for my love. And I was angry with her. And I had lots of fights with her. And only when I was in the beginning of the 30s, I was able to reflect on a deeper level and to realize that it had nothing to do with my mother. It only had to do how I perceived the world. And
you were projecting on her, basically.
I was projecting on her. And so practically, as I said before, you have to put yourself into a point that you are willing to be very raw with yourself, to drop all that story and be raw with yourself. And when you are raw with yourself, you can also very easily let go of all these things. As long as you cling on to some kind of stories, one will see that some kind of these notions, for example, like anger, come through. Worrying is one, anger is another one. That every now and then come through. That means that you are still clinging to that story of who you are.
And all patterns, right?
And it is raw as this. There is a lot of work out there in the world that people do, psychological work, a lot of rituals, a lot of ceremonies, a lot of talking, in order to overcome their trauma. But what are they really doing is, in a way, try to trick their ego. That's all. To implement another idea, but always on the level of separation and ego. Separation meaning not separating the dark side, the shadow side, from the blissful life. Not this separation, but the separation how this ego is perceiving the rest of the world. It's the same loop. It's the same loop. And one can see that people who are staying in that same loop, they will not come out of it. They will feel good after they have done rituals and they have done groups and all these kind of things and this healing work. They will feel good for a few weeks and all of a sudden it kicks back in. Because at the end of the day, it's a trick of the mind. It's trying, in a way, to manipulate the ego, to perceive it in a different way, to forgive the mother for what she has done. There is nothing to forgive. The moment I forgive my mother to what she has done, I'm again coming from the lens of a separation. My mother is a reflection of me. So there is nothing to forgive. There is only to integrate an understanding. That's the only thing. The moment I'm talking about forgiveness, I'm talking about seeing the world in a separation.
Teach us then how to integrate and how to embrace it with compassion, not only for ourselves or parts in ourselves, also with others.
Well, the ego needs to come to a point where the ego starts to question itself. This sorrow that I have in life, this suffering that I have in parts of my life, that whether I'm running for money, whether I have an unhappy situation in my family or whatever, whether I'm a criminal, you know, and I'm in jail, and I have to come to that point to be willing to ask the question, who was it that brought me here? Who was it that brought me in jail? You see, who was it that created that unhappy family situation that I have? Who was it that created this ambience in my job that I'm not happy? Who was it that made me broke and I don't have money? That is the question to ask. The answer is very simple. The answer is action and reaction of the only existing very being. All the rest, remember, is the theater that is playing around you, for you, by you. That is the important thing. And there is nothing to teach how to do it. The ego has to come to a point and say, I am in this miserable situation. What was it that brought me in this miserable situation? And it was not any circumstance. And it was not any being in the outside. It was not a system. It was not a judge or a policeman that brought me into jail. That's not the right answer.
That's for the mental.
And it's also not the right answer to say, yeah, it was me. It's not the right answer. I mean, it's one step to a reflection. And of course, it is me is very easily said, but when I ask you, and what is it in you that brought you here? That's already a little bit more difficult to inquire that one. What is it? And then you inquire more and you inquire more, and you realize that whole story that you are clinging to in your life, to be this and to be that, created that outcome. And if you don't let go of this story, you will end up constantly in the same situation. The master constantly knocks on the door. It's literally about dropping that situation. And there are many human beings, most human beings, they are not able in the earth walk to answer that question. They are not able in the earth walk. Many only a little, and some not at all, to sip on that beautiful nectar of bliss of life. They'll give up their body and We'll try in another constellation, if that works better, to experience that bliss in a manifested form. And everything is set to this. It is pure bliss. Life is pure bliss. And whoever doesn't perceive it like this is coming from a very deeply ingrained I want to call it wrong perception of reality. And of course, there is no good and bad, no wrong and right. Everything serves the experience. It's all about the experience. And if a being on its earth walk decides to live through a suffering experience, it is part of it. It is not that suffering is something bad. It's just more demanding. It just needs much more energy as a human being. It costs a higher toll on the human body. It's not bad. It needs more effort. And if the human being is ready to give this more effort by investing more in its ego belief, in its ego perception, in its ego lens, then suffering is nothing else than an experience. And if we understand also that suffering is an experience, and not go into that ego, oh my God, the world wants also all everything bad for me, and I'm always going through this hardship, and why always me, and me. That is the ego that doesn't recognize that actually it is this human aggregate's choice to live that sort of life. It's all by choice. So whenever we talk about healing, also physical healing, we need to understand that with all the help that a healer gives to a person, we are also working against the ideal form of earth walk that being has chosen for it to experience.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing with us your wisdom, and definitely I have a lot of takeaways from our conversation today, which I will maybe summarize, but not before I ask you, what is your message for the audience out of the episode today?
My message would be this one thing. Be aware that you are a lens of the entire existence. And that entire existence exists only because how you perceive it. You are creating all that existence within your mind. And if you are aware about that, and you are not happy what you perceive, that is the first point of inquiry to change.
You've seen how emotional triggers, projections, and inner conflict are invitation to traits that were rejected and might be keys to your purpose, how personal healing and collective awakening are inseparable. Loving the beast within is not a metaphor. It's how you embrace the divine within and start embodying the truth, not to perfection, but to integration, to depth, to light, rooted in shadow. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to your undivided self.
Thank you for joining us on this enlightening journey with another voice of the One Mind. We thank you for your support, and to ensure that you never miss a drop of this wisdom nectar, click subscribe and stay connected with us on the onemind.org. Until next time, may your path be illuminated with profound insights and growth.